Hello and welcome back to the Godly Podcast. Welcome back to the show. Welcome back to the show. You know, I used to tell you guys that I would get you like the best and the best of guests for like each episode. So you guys would always anticipate for like the next episode and stuff for people that want to jackpot, because you know that this is an across-border series. Today, I have a feeling that this guest I'm bringing is actually very, very, very wonderful. And it's something I know you guys will gain a lot from, especially for the fact that he has been recent with us in this country before he left. Well, I see no reason why he should leave. He should have waited till the election. But, it's good to have someone that left this year, so we'll get like more of like current stuff. Hello. I'm going to let him introduce himself for you guys, just so I don't like miss anything out.
Hello, my name is John. I recently left the country to just begin working in the UK, not just a couple of months back. And don't know what else I'm supposed to give in the details. I don't like to give too much details anyway. But I'm John.
So I would have asked like how long, but now I know you've left for 6 months. I want to also know if you miss this country. Firstly, before you answer, I see no reason why you should miss, because if you say yes, I would advise you to start coming back. But so that we can exchange. But I still want to know, do you miss the country? Do you miss Nigeria? Being outside Nigeria for 6 months now, do you miss Nigeria?
Well, that's a tricky question to answer. I would say a yes and a no at the same time. I'll start with a yes, because considering I just moved in recently, and I think settling in actually makes you start missing home and brings back the whole vibes of you could have easily done this if this was in Nigeria and all those stuff like that. So I would say yes to that, because it brings out some of those homely feelings as well. I would say no, because obviously I don't miss sleeping and dreaming of getting kidnapped or not being able to travel easily. Like at the moment, I work quite far from where I stay. And every Monday, I'll usually get on the train. It's like a 4 hour plus trip with different places where I'm actually connecting. And I don't get to kabosh and pray in the morning before I leave my house. I just go on there, and I know the train is actually going to be waiting at the time it's supposed to be, and it moves smooth, and I get to walk at the exact time I know planned out to. So I would say no for that, because you can plan out a lot of things, and life seems more organized than it was back home.
Wow. I also want to know, why would you leave this place? Why would you leave this place? Everybody, we supposed to did this country together, because all of us booked this guy. But like, why did you decide to leave Nigeria and move abroad?
Well, in the initial time after graduation, I actually wanted to stay back. I was the kind of person that would actually just go into a postgraduate training and become a fellow and continue working until probably I retire or die or something. But during my service year, something very tricky happened, and it changed how I looked at Nigeria, really. Besides just the security, I remember I went, I think, about 7 months without pay during service, and I got livid, I got mad. It actually changed my perception of things, and I looked at it that I don't think this is actually going to improve anytime soon. But I actually need to do something about it. So I remember on the 8th month, I got paid 1 month salary. And immediately I called my friends that were already on the whole Japan movement and all that. Like, what's up? How are you guys doing this stuff? How the right IELTS as what materials you need and all this stuff. So that's how it basically started for me. And the rest, they say, is history, really.
Wow, so Nigeria frustrated you out. That's been frustrating all of us, so we have not left you. So that's not an excuse. So.
Well, some other things added up. So the insecurity was, to me, was actually not secondary. It was really important, because I left one job down to another one because of insecurity. And I think it kept getting worse. and he kept coming closer and all that. So I think that added, that's actually one as well. And I actually hope to grow a family where I'm actually at ease with myself and relaxed, and I know the basic stuff around I'll be able to provide easily without having to like stick my neck out every day.
Just before we continue, I saw like on your pinned tweet, you can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah, on your pinned tweet, you tweeted something where you were like, where you talked about how you and your friends have been like on like the jackpot, that's for our non-Nigerian listeners, on the like traveling abroad movement. You talked about it and you were like, and one thing that stood out for me was where you said this was 2019, and now we are at 2021. I don't know if I'm right, right? It was 2019 you started, yeah. So I want to know, does it take that long to travel abroad?
Okay, it doesn't take that long, but we had some peculiarities during my time. I think I wrote my IELTS. I wrote IELTS in I think December of 2018. Yeah. Now the interesting thing is, following my IELTS, I wrote the first exam, which was the following year in 2019 in March. However, same issues with Nigeria. I couldn't, you know, that there's a way we actually have to write our visa application letters and supporting documents. And one important thing to show ties is you need to have a job in Nigeria. Now, for me personally, it was difficult to establish that ties because I couldn't get a good job at the point. So it actually caused some delays. And when I subsequently got one, like I said, insecurity, I went to Northwestern Nigeria. I was working at a federal medical center, actually. I worked there, was actually prepping to actually come for a visa interview, and some funny stuff started happening, and just still around the insecurity, gunshots and stuff like that. So I decided to actually change jobs again. And that slowed down my movement again. That's why I was the last person to actually move. These were the things that actually contributed. When I moved down again, I had to start afresh again. You know, you have to come back, rent a new house. You spend so much money furnishing the house and stuff like that. So I started the saving afresh again. And subsequently, I think in a couple of months, I was ready. And this was now early part of 2020. This was now to early 2020, and I had an exam booked, and unfortunately it was cancelled. This, I believe, will be in June because of COVID.
Oh, wow.
It became almost impossible to actually travel then because of the whole COVID stuff. So by the time we got to the end of the year and the prospects of vaccines started coming up, things started opening up little by little, and visa applications resumed and all that. So had to reapply again immediately, and I got that, moved in this year to actually write the exam. And because I was long overdue, I couldn't wait to leave, really. So I left a couple of months after I wrote my second exam and got my license. I just left almost immediately.
Wow. Firstly, I would like to state to our listeners that John is a doctor, because they don't know, because you're a doctor, right? So I'm not saying anything wrong.
Yeah, you're correct. So
for the listeners, the people that are meant to be saving our life, because one day I have a feeling that we'll just go to General Hospital and it'll be empty because you guys have left. Every single one of you. So that aside, but I want to know, walk me through your travel, like the whole process.
Well, I think for doctors, it's actually straightforward, although I think in a couple of years or so, there might be some changes. It's really just IELTS, which is like a test of English. And there are certain, there's a certain band, minimum band score you're supposed to get. And after that, you write the first exam, which is just an MCQ-based type of exam. And it's theory, you can write that in Nigeria. The second one is what is usually like an objective test where you actually do some practical tough and patient simulate patient interaction, which you only can do in the UK. Following that, basically you apply for to get registered and get the license. So it's really straightforward. It's not, there's nothing to it's actually straightforward. Yeah, that's just a process.
I also would like to ask, like, just before you left, I'm sure you had like expectations, of like security and like a lot of other things, but like leaving this country, what were your expectations about the place you were going to? Were they very unrealistic, or were you like, how was it?
I wouldn't say unrealistic. I mean, I actually anticipated most of the things I saw. There were some that wowed me, but you get to discover that after a couple of weeks, everything becomes, you start becoming like, it's normal, this is supposed to happen and all that. Of course, that's not obtainable back home, but I don't think they were, I believe I met a lot of my expectations are actually what I actually came to see here. In terms of security, for instance, I remember one time I was actually called to actually stay longer on a shift to hand over to another doctor. And I think I was supposed to stay until around 5 or 6. And because of the time we're in here, it gets dark very early, let's say from like 4:35. So the Nigerian in me was already scared, and I was already telling them, oh no, it's going to be dark then and all that. Like, I don't want to start going all the long distance, because like I said earlier, I have to travel down from where I work about almost 5 hours down to where I stay. So the Nigerian in me was actually scared. So when I spoke to one of the staffing managers, and she was like, oh, it's just 6 o'clock, it's just 7, you can travel down and get down by like 11, 12, and I was almost shouting. It was just a Nigerian in me, really. It's actually normal to actually travel down that distance. And I'm talking a distance of, let's say you're traveling at night, and of course you're going to stop at multiple places. And let's say from I traveled every Monday, distance from, like, I don't know if you're conversant with the north, but I will use a distance from, I'll say, Kano to Abuja.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's really traveling, no? It's not going to work.
So the Nigerian in me was really scared of doing that distance in the night, but I realized there are people on the trains everywhere you were going at. You didn't need to be scared. Everywhere was fine. There was light. Nepal was not going to take light and all that. Or you're not going to get harassed by SARS because you have an iPhone or something. So I think that was one thing I wouldn't say shocked me. It's not as if I didn't know it was supposed to be like that, but I wasn't expecting it to be that straightforward and easy, really. Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's always light, there's water running. Of course, the rent is quite on the high, but of course it's because of what the minimum wage is here and how much people make. So just be able to make ends meet and all. I think besides that, everything has been fairly okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So like I thought that I also want to know, or the listeners would also want to know too, how was your first experience on landing in a place that's not Nigeria? Because anywhere would is better than, like, for like everybody that wants to travel, they have this feeling that anywhere would be better. So how was the feeling of like landing in England? How was it?
What should I use? It was really exciting, but I remember one time before 8 days before the first time I would travel, because I actually came for my exam in February of this year. I remember reading a tweet from Joe Abba about his first experience and expectations when he was going to travel abroad. And he said everything died immediately he landed. I wouldn't say everything died for me immediately I landed, but I mean, before you actually make the trip, it looks like you're going to one supernatural place, yeah? But once I landed, of course, there were lots of, I wouldn't say supernatural, but things way up there that I needed to use and I had not used before. Like I needed to get on an underground, crazy speed and all those stuff. I didn't understand what the directions were. It's actually easy over time. I actually realized it was actually straightforward stuff, but it was completely difficult. It was very difficult. I kept on asking everywhere, where is this? Where is that? Okay, do I do this? Do I do that? And so I think it was quite a good experience. I came in February and it was winter and it snowed and I experienced snow. I had to go outside and make a video and snap and be happy with my friends. And all that stuff. So it was really a good experience, really a good first experience. Yeah.
Wow, good win. Yeah. There's one thing that I know my guests complain most times about. Like people that travel abroad, they're like, wow, like if you go to the hospitals for treatment, that it's way better than what we have here in Nigerian general hospitals and stuff like that and everything, that the doctors are nice, that this is this, the equipment and all and everything. So now I want to ask a doctor that has worked in Nigeria, how is it traveling, leaving Nigeria, migrating to the UK?
Usually I would say medical conditions I would use the word are local, meaning the particular medical conditions that will be commoner in the particular country or locality, depending on certain demographics. I mean, you wouldn't expect to be seeing things like malaria here commonly. You would expect their own common conditions to be here commonly. But in terms of, I'll speak in terms of doctors and healthcare workers, I really don't think the notion that maybe doctors are nicer or here than in Nigeria. I think they're very nice hospitals in Nigeria too. I worked at a university medical center and it was cool. I think the difference really was in terms of equipment really, because there are staffing issues here as well. There are certain tests and maybe imagings that are commonplace here. And in Nigeria, probably you need a ceremony for it to be done. For basic imagings like maybe a CT scan or maybe an MRI. So I would say those are commonplace here. It's like they do it every day. It's like water. And maybe for something like, I remember how many ECGs I was able to see done or do in Nigeria, maybe a couple. And then I came here and then the machine is just on the corridor, maybe one or two or three of them on the corridor. So it's the staffing issues are everywhere. I wouldn't completely rule 100% to say Nigeria is, that maybe the doctors are not nice or the nurses or whoever works in the hospital is not nice. It really depends on the hospital you're going to. Of course, there are certain people that can suffer and the system doesn't really check that for. Really, I don't think in terms of workers, there's, considering what we have back home, I don't think there's, it might be, there's a lot of room to improve, but I'm not going to throw anybody under the bus for that because it's a difficult situation. But in terms of equipment, and in terms of equipment, really, we are almost not, in terms of equipment and treatment plans, I don't want to use that word, but... It seems we're almost not practicing medicine in Nigeria, I would say. Almost not. Because there's just wow. So much. There's just the gap is just too wide. Really. Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy. That's something like what I wanted to hear. You said we're almost not practicing medicine. But like, it's crazy because I was having a podcast before now. I was recording with someone and he was talking about how like in terms of like the equipment that you see in the hospitals and how surgeries could just be like done like at the randomest time, like as soon as possible, and like how cheap it is and stuff like that. Yeah. And medically, I wanted to know how your perspective has changed from being a Nigerian doctor to being in the UK?
Well, I think for like this equipment I just spoke about, for instance, I think when you use things, you actually get used to them and you learn more, and you there's room for improvement, really. But if you don't have it and you keep reading the books, then you get to a point where you actually know what to do, but you're not doing it. So I think really that's the problem with Nigeria, because you have lots of people going through training. They become very good. They are vast. They are well read. But let's say, for instance, maybe a management of something that is active, that you need to do stuff within maybe a certain number of hours to actually get the best of outcomes. And then you cannot actually do maybe like a CT scan within that period. I remember, for instance, this something like a CT scan. I'm hammering on that because that's the commonest one I can actually put a hand on, because it's very scarce in Nigeria. I can count how many hospitals that have CT scans, functioning CT scans in Nigeria that work every day. Let's say someone has a stroke and there's a protocol for how to manage that, and it's time bound. And once those times pass, the prognosis or the chances of the person doing well keep reducing and stuff like that. But I remember practicing in a place where you had to like put someone in a car, not an ambulance, put someone in a car literally and send the person like a 2-3 hour ride to actually go do a CT scan and come back with the result. Now, you're actually supposed to walk within 4.5 hours on that CT scan, for instance, for using the protocol. So you actually send the person to go do the CT scan and actually come back way out of the time you were actually supposed to intervene. So it means you're actually not going to practice that thing ever, going by the way things are in Nigeria, because you are actually going to keep missing that golden hour, if you understand what I'm trying to explain. So these are the little things. Doing stuff like ECGs on the wards, almost non-existent in Nigeria, except maybe for some private hospitals, or maybe for the little experience I've had in Nigeria, or maybe even for some major surgeries that are really common here, and they do them in, let's say, maybe a short period of time, sometimes 1 hour, 2 hours, because there are obviously better ways and machinery to do some of these things. It's a whole wide gap, like I've said earlier. So I think a lot regarding not just personnel, of course, we have a wide gap there already, which keeps widening, but we really don't have, we really can't think of matching up even 1% of the machinery.
Another question is, being abroad now for like about 6 months, what things you have seen about that place that you don't like? Do you get what I'm saying? Like, you know, there's a lot of good things or good parts to being abroad. So what parts were probably you didn't prepare for, or you knew about, but you now see that you're like, wow, this would have been better in Nigeria, which I obviously don't think it, but but I have to ask. So tell us.
Better. Let's say like maybe something as simple as getting a shave. Like, you really need to actually get a good barber. It's actually an extreme sport here, really. It sounds like something you don't think of in Nigeria, but it's extreme sport here, getting a good barber. And maybe some fun activities, really. What they actually see as fun here might just upset you or something like that. And most importantly, if you can get your Nigerian food, or if you can cook for yourself, just do that, because I don't want to use the word before they send me back to Nigeria, but their food don't make sense.
Oh man,
I don't. Let not throw me back to Nigeria, but their food don't make them. Nah, not at all. Yeah, so those are the little things. There might be others, but this few.
So right now, if we are planning to round up, I want to know, what advice would you have to people in Nigeria that were just like you, probably 2018 or 2019, when they were still thinking, contemplating, should I jackpot, should I not jackpot, and stuff like that? What advice would you have for them presently from like what you have faced?
Actually, I believe not everybody wants to leave the country, and not everybody would actually eventually leave the country.
Sorry, can I just cut you in there?
Okay,
I'm sorry. Yeah, but like I feel that 98% of the people in Nigeria want to leave. The remaining 2%,
where are you getting your statistics from?
the remaining 2% are the people frustrating us. They are the people frustrating us in this country. The remaining 2% I don't want to leave.
There are actually people in Nigeria that actually do not want to leave, quite a number, even for doctors that actually do not want to leave. So leaving is actually personal. That's why I said there are actually people that want to leave and there are actually people that want to stay. So for the people that actually want to leave, it's actually doable. It's a lot of capital put in, because at the moment our naira is almost, we don't even know what it exchanges at. So it makes traveling and all that, the whole Japan movement, become very expensive. I remember meeting someone that told me that his school fees, I think his school fees was around, when he schooled here about 6 years ago, I think he paid around 6 or 7 million, and that same school fees is almost 10, 12 million now. I think the longer you live it, the more likely you're going to actually have to pay more, and that makes it even more difficult. So for people that actually want to leave, I think I would say the best time to leave will really be now. Me, I didn't want to see how Buhari will organize the next election, so I had to excuse myself.
Wow.
So yeah.
Oh yeah. That's crazy. That's yeah. But like from like your the time you have stayed here, what things you have seen and you are like, if Nigeria adopts this, probably we could have like a better life and a lot of things could change. Like what things you have seen that are like very small and probably people might see as insignificant, but you're like, if this is added to my country, this would solve this kind of problem.
I think majority of our problem comes from corruption. That's the fact. Majority of our problem is actually corruption. And the way our system is actually designed, it's like I keep telling people, it's easier for you to actually approach someone that is a counselor or a chairman than it is for you to even have access to someone that is a governor or maybe a senator or something like that. So I think representation is actually grassroots, and that's where development actually starts from. We really need to decentralize all stuff like that up to the local government level, especially in terms of funding, for instance, which is why I support the whole local government autonomy stuff. It looks like the chairman is going to have access to lots of money and spend it, and but you're more likely to hold your chairman accountable than you're likely to hold your governor, because he will be more accessible. He's on the lower cadre, he's easier meat to fry than the governor. So it's actually going to help. And almost everything here works by crowdfunding. Now, if you look at the NHS, the way it's funded, it's crowdfunding. People actually paying the national insurance, people paying a lot into these things monthly from their pay. What like our NHIS, it's we have a good structure in NHIS, but people don't pay to NHIS. If you look at the structure of our NHIS, I don't know if we have more time, if I should just say a bit about that. So if you look at the structure of our NHIS, it's actually, I think it was supposed to be 3,000. I've forgotten the exact, if it was 3,000 or 1,500. Now it was supposed to be 3,000 per head contribution. I think there were debates about 1,500 coming from the person and then 1,500 coming from the federal government. This was the structure of the NHIS. This was supposed to go into the person's primary care, if wow. you're conversant with the way our NHIS works. Now, what I've learned is it's 1.5 that is actually coming because the federal government is actually not deducting that amount. So out of that 1.5, they divide it into two. 750 goes into primary care, and then the other 750 goes to HMOs. 750 naira is not up to £1, or is about £1.
Wow.
Going into, you can't compare it with people that are paying NHS or national insurance. Listen, monthly, some people pay up to £300, £400, £500 every month, depending on how much they make. So you really can't compare. So these are the things we should look at. I mentioned corruption first because even with this little amount, we could actually still do something. But you realize most of this money goes to waste in the end. So I think these are things which we really need to actually buckle up on. Another example is like the bus systems and all that. But still, this is crowdfunded. That's why the bus can move even when it's empty, because it's running on a crowdfunded base. But if you're just going to tell people to pay an amount to actually move a bus, then the bus is not going to move if that amount has not been paid, unlike the coal crowdfunded stuff, which is why they have systems in place moving, because there's a crowdfunded base already on which the system can rely on. So I think these are things we should really start looking at in Nigeria as well. Settling in here has been a bit easier for me because I have a couple of friends here, and I actually stay with one of my friends. So it's easier. The advice, our advice is if you can actually make that plan when you're in Nigeria before you actually come in, because like they say, this place is boring. You will not know it's boring until you actually come here. People actually go out maybe when it's snowing and snap some pictures and be like, hey, or maybe go to a pub and stuff like that. You think it's like that every day. It's like that once in a month.
Wow.
For some people. So if you actually get a good base of where you're going, and maybe you have someone you could actually be with, or someone you could actually relate with at least once in a while, because otherwise you'll probably be in your room for 1 month and nobody's going to check up on you really. So you actually have to plan to actually have fun, really. So I think having that in mind for people that are coming in will really help prevent some of this stuff that people actually complain about and say the place is boring and all that. But it's not like Nigeria where you could just go over time. Maybe I stay on the street. I don't know anybody on the street.
For the whole 6 months.
Yeah, it's unlike Nigeria. I don't even know anybody that stays in. I'm on the third floor. It's like a small house, but I'm on the third floor. I don't know anybody in the house.
Wow.
Other than the people I stay with. So it can be that way. People are just minding their business and stuff like that. So you wouldn't expect to actually just meet someone randomly. Yeah, except you actually speak to someone and stuff like that, which rarely will happen anyway. Except you're that kind of person. But if it the way it happens in Nigeria, where you can just easily mix up, and it doesn't really happen that way. Everybody's just on their own.
Wow. It's really been a very wonderful time. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. I really, really appreciate this. I really appreciate your time because I know being there, you'd have to work with time and you'd definitely be a very busy person. So this is a very big deal for me. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Thank you for being on the show.
All right. You're welcome. Thanks a lot for having me.